This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Good to see you looking so well and alive. And
yes.
You mean not falling over from a stroke?
I got to say, I mean, you brought me to tears watching the movie.
Oh, good.
You brought me to my tears. Attention. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. Absolutely
well,
beautiful.
Even before the stroke in the film,
thank you.
Leonard looks like he's barely holding on in every scene. How did you work up to that presence?
It wasn't hard, really. It wasn't. As a matter of fact, it was kind of sort of liberating because I'm Italian and I'm rather gregarious and unhealthy. And Leonard was quiet, imploded, terribly contained, very proper. And it was good for me to just sit and be, you know, which is the aim of life anyway. And most of us never get to it. And Leonard was just a man who sat very quietly and didn't express himself wildly, lived in his head. So those were interesting things for me to do and to work on. They weren't difficult. I mean, they weren't painful. Difficult, but not painful.
So, can I ask how you came to the project? What attracted you? Was it the script?
Andrew, first the script. It's always the script with me. Always the words. And they were glorious words. I kept reading it, turning the page and thinking, this can't be true. This cannot be true. And then, of course, they had no money and no production planned and no actors and they had nothing. But then I got a copy of Andrew Wagner's only movie is called The Talent Given Us, which is a wonderful documentary about his family. And we met here at Orso's, and it's famous now amongst the little band of us that he didn't say to me, I would like it if you would consider doing my movie. He sat down and said, now, you're going to do this movie. And I said, don't be so sure, don't be so cocky. And we got up 3 hours later, and I was crazy about him. And then we had many, 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 many hours before I committed, many hours going through it page by page and making sure. Because I said to him, we only have 18 days. We better know each other, we better know the character, and we better know what we're aiming for, because we're not going to be able to stop the shoot and go sit in a corner and debate anything. There won't be any time. And so the preparation was actually more work than the actual shoot. But once we got through it, we were able to really concentrate on putting Leonard on film.
Your dynamic, Lily Taylor, is precious.
Isn't she the best?
It's precious.
She's the best thing that ever walked this earth.
Like yourself.
Except my own daughter.
She's very alive and exuberant in all of her roles.
She is, and she's a heavenly actress to be around and to work with. We've become very good friends. My own daughter's only 24, and I love her, Lily, just about as much. Some women exude a kind of compassionate graciousness, and that Lily has it in spades. I enjoyed her very much.
What did you come away? I mean, my question's in two parts. Over the years, you played many different kinds of characters, and I wondered if they really affect you in life, and do you kind of take a part of them with you? And how
you take a part of every one of them with you. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been lucky in playing great roles in the theater. And sometimes, when the play closes, shards of everybody I've ever played live with me. They don't live with me to any crippling effect, and I really can't stand it when I read an actor who says, "It took me a year to get over Hamlet." Well, then you did it wrong. You should be over it by the time you hit Orso's. But certain characters, I gain from every character I play. I never lose anything. I always gain.
What do you take from Leonard?
It's such a cliche, but what I did take from Leonard was a sharper understanding of the time I waste, of the time I don't use creatively or intelligently or emotionally or romantically, the hours and hours we all waste in contemplativeness or fear or passivity. He reminded me of to step up, because I'm not as old as him, but I'm close, and playing him reminded me of how foolish it is to live in the past or for the future, but just to live now, which is the big catchword these days, you know, the book of now and now in the moment, but properly applied, it is absolutely true. There is only this moment. And if you do look at it that way and say anything in comparison to now is ridiculous, you know, you can't say that was better, this is going to be worse. The now is where you should be. So he kind of reminded me of that, and I took stock of it.
So now that you're rapping on Frost Nixon, what are you taking away from that experience?
Well, I've gained a great deal from him, and I'll only answer one question about this movie, because this movie doesn't need any help. You know, a year from now, believe me, the machine will take over on Universal's, starting out even needs all the help it can get. But Richard Nixon has taught me, and I just finished with him 2 days ago, he's also taught me to be as unjudgmental as possible, to look at every person as a person and not look at somebody as a wicked president or an evil president or a drunk or a crook, but to realize everybody gets up every day with a whole host of monsters in their head. Some people are defeated by those monsters, some people are destroyed by them. He was one who was destroyed. So he also taught me, you know, to tell my monsters to go away.
Did you and Lauren get tired of eating all that bread and jam?
I didn't eat that much.
No?
I think I had, you know, when you have a movie as tightly budgeted as this and time, there's only so much toast in the toaster. You know? I don't think they had enough budget for more than one loaf of bread. And when that was gone, we had to move on.
Well, the language is fantastic in this movie. Are you able to find that in some of the bigger projects you get to do? Also?
Yeah, well, certainly Frost Nixon is brilliantly written, and that was a lucky break. The movie I'm starting on Monday for Rich Kelly called The Box is equally brilliant. I'm having an extraordinary year. Great role and a great cast, and I'm thrilled with what I have to say in that film.
Kelly can be pretty out there.
I can't wait.
Any weird, challenging things that are hard to get your lips around?
Well, there will be, in language, no, not at all. There certainly will be physically, in how I'm going to appear physically, because that's what Rich specializes in. But it's so different than starting out, and so different than Frost Nixon. I'm jumping into a whole other genre. Certainly with a much younger cast, Cameron Diaz and James Marsden are the hot young actors, and it puts me in a new world. You know, I met Rich Kelly and his producing partner, Sean McKittrick, the other day, having had long conversations on the phone, and I didn't know that they were the director and producer. I thought they were like AD assistants. I met a very old, much older woman who was doing the clothes, and these two young guys kept talking and interrupting her, and I finally said, I said, "What do you do in the movie?" He said, "I'm the director." I said, okay, you're my boss.
I was going to ask you, what was it about that project that got you? Was it the quality of the script?
Oh, the script is wonderful. It's just wonderful. Mm. You know, this is a movie that starts out with Cameron and Jimmy in the morning waking up, and the doorbell rings after Jimmy goes away to work, and a mysterious man in a suit and a top coat and a hat is carrying a box, and he says to her, she said, "Are you a salesman?" He says, "I'm offering you something." There's a key there in an envelope. You have to talk to your husband. If you break the seal of the key, you put it in the box. The box will open, and there'll be a button in it. You are free to press that button. If you press the button, you'll be given, it's 1970, you'll be given $400,000 in cash, tax-free, and no questions asked. However, someone you don't know, have never met, will never know, will die the moment you press the button. Make up your mind. And of course the movie then goes from there. It's wonderful. Based on a Richard Matheson Twilight Zone episode called Button Button.
And can I ask what character you play in the film?
I play the man who brings the box, of course. Yeah. Arlington Stewart is his name.
Is that a long shoot for you?
Yes, 7 weeks, starting in a couple of weeks.
So you don't just leave them alone after you deliver the package?
Oh no. Believe me, I'm there for the duration.
Oh.
I'm there, and it's a remarkable script. Every actor I know says to me, "How did you get that?" It's just grab thrilled. I'm thrilled.
Now, you will be forever romanticized by women all over the world Dracula performance.
Well, thanks.
But you've also had so many other indelible roles, such as in Dave or Eddie, comedic, hysterical. Do you ever get recognized for any of those parts?
Yes, constantly. Constantly. Mm-hmm. And it's very... The older I get, the more recognized I get, particularly in New York. And I don't... Lately. I bet I've had some great successes in New York in the last two or three years. And then also all the films I've done, all the successful films I've done, appear on television constantly. So that
We were talking about that earlier, Dave, the past 2 years.
Dave has been on a lot. Dracula has been on, although I don't look anything like that anymore. But certainly Lolita's been shown a great deal more than it was when we first made it. And I did a television series for George Clooney called Unscripted that got enormous young audience for me. And Good Night and Good Luck, the same thing. So it's been
phenomenal
a great...
Phenomenal as Paley in that.
Thank you. It's been a great run.
I was going to ask you, are you looking forward to playing Perry Mason again?
White.
I mean,
Perry White.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. That's. I don't think that'll happen until 2009 because they don't have quite a script yet. They're not going to get one before the strike. But that'll. I have two more of those to do. And I love Bryan Singer. I just love him.
And have you already thought about what you'll be doing after Richard Kelly's The Box?
That wraps the middle of January, and if I don't have a job, it will be, lucky for me, the first time in over 2.5 years. So I will probably do something exotic that I've never done. I'll go to Africa, or my daughter's here and she wants to go on a safari, and I've always wanted to do that too.
Well, speaking of Dracula, with Halloween coming up, I can ask you, what's your favorite Halloween costume?
Oh... it's probably my birthday suit with somebody I really like.
And
the last words spoken before the candle gets blown out are trick or treat.
Best answer ever.
I'm going to use that.
Do you have any plans to return to Broadway in the near future? Any projects under consideration?
No, because I've been on the stage now so much in the last few years that to be liberated from that routine, Frost Nixon, I did 360 some odd times from London to New York. And the joy of just going on the film set every day and not knowing I had to do that enormous role night after night was great. And once you click into that schedule, I'm fine with it. I'm very disciplined. But once you're out of it, you realize, my God, it's like, you know, it's like waiting for the second hand to go at 2:45 when you're a kid at school and your bell rings. Free, you know. And now I feel free, and I don't want to go back to it unless it's something I just can't live without. So I think I'll stay away from the stage for maybe another year or two stuff. And I'm lucky, I don't know why, but at this particular time in my career, my film catalog's getting better and better. So.
That's because people are starved for good talent.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Do you have any anecdotes or little stories about what happens on the set that were anything interesting and noteworthy?
Starting out in the evening was a very interesting set because we were confined. You know, that little apartment I had was a real little West Side apartment. There was a room off camera, literally 2 feet away, where Lauren and Lily and Adrian and I changed. And there was a little curtain hung up. And Adrian and I were on one side of that curtain. We'd run in and make our changes, and Lily and Lauren and someone else who came into that set were on the other. And then we would have to get in. One morning the producer called me and said, you know, the AD's car broke down on the highway and I'll be picking you up. And she arrived with a sandwich in her hand, this old jalopy, and I jumped in and we drove downtown to the Village to shoot a scene in a restaurant. You know, the scene where I come in very ill and Adrian takes me to the bathroom. I had to change clothes in the bathroom of that because there was no place else to change clothes. The night before, one day, I became violently ill. I ate something I shouldn't have eaten in a restaurant. And I literally couldn't get up off the floor of the bathroom. And I called, I was lying on the floor, and I called Andrew and I said, I'm really, really sick. And Andrew said, you have to. We only have the set today. I'll come up and I'll carry you there. So somebody came up, one of the assistants came up with Adrian Lester, and they literally came into my apartment. And you know that nausea you have when you just don't want to move? and I took some anti-nausea things, and I laid in the back of this van, and I got down there, and we shot the scene.
Now, given the low budget and Leonard's rather frugal wardrobe, did you have, one suit and one shirt?
I had a cardigan sweater, a jacket, a couple of shirts, and a couple of ties, and that was my own shoes, I think. I don't remember. And that hat, which was a lucky find. It was in a box with a bunch of hats, and I went, that's it. And the glasses, you know, lady brought me over four or five pairs of glasses, and I picked one. And, he was nice to create that way, you know. It was, because I knew his clothes weren't going to be terribly important to him fashion-wise. They needed to be comfortable, and that was nice. I'm not having to concern myself with that cut and style and all that.
Now, when you were typing, were you actually typing? Or were
yes.
you just typing,
I was typing
mumbo jumbo?
No, I was typing. Oh. I was typing words I wanted to say, but they weren't on paper. They just were me typing. I love the way the film begins and ends. Mm-hmm. I think it's very poignant.
Yes.
So I have to ask, do you think Leonard finished the book?
You know, that you're only the second person today who asked me that, and actually, it doesn't matter. You know, what only matters is he got up and he started again. That's the point of the movie. Whether he finishes it, whether it's well received, whether or not he could start out as the end of the picture, he's there typing, and 5 minutes later he could have a stroke. You know, an hour later his daughter could be hit by a car. That's the whole point, I think, of what life is like when you get into these years. Is the result doesn't really matter. The outcome isn't as important as the process, and the point of the film is to say, get up, just get up and do whatever it is, just do it, and don't worry about the outcome of it, bad or good.
What's it like to hit a woman?
It's great.
I was really hoping you would have hit her much earlier in the film.
Yeah,
you would smack her. Smack is, we shouldn't give that away, I guess, but it doesn't matter.
Do you enjoy playing a good guy more or a bad guy?
Well, he was good. Good to his toes, and I loved playing him, and I adored playing Richard Nixon. And I just like to act. I really love to create people, and it doesn't much matter. You know, because they're all good to me. When you are a villain, you don't think you're a villain. Other people do, but you don't. You think everything you're doing is right and correct. And why don't people see it your way? Bang, bang. So I like it all. Yeah.
Do you know people in real life as articulate as Leonard, Heather, and Ariel?
Yes. I live in the Upper West Side of New York, and it's sort of an enclave for artists and writers and painters and actors. And there's always somebody who wants to talk profoundly about something in a coffee shop. You know, it's a great city to live in for that particular thing.
You know, it's funny because when I was watching you in the performance, a few weeks ago, I interviewed an older writer, and it was absolutely him. Impeccable.
Really?
Impeccable. I don't know if you know the author, Rabbi Harold Kushner, who wrote When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And also gentleman, and the way you carried yourself, and the way like old school,
Yeah.
It was absolutely him. So I was going to ask you if you modeled it after someone you knew. Because
no, just as I said earlier, those men all over my neighborhood, they're just everywhere. And they are so polite.
Yes.
So unfailingly polite,
yes.
You know. Even to the point where sometimes I'll be coming along Central Park West, either off my bike or a run or just walking. And I'll get to the door of my building, and one of these older gentlemen, and they're older than I am, and I'm old, and they'll get to the door, and he'll go like that, not in any phony way. It's just, I have all the time in the world. You go in first. And I'm very touched by that, and it's around more than we think it is. You know, it just is. We just don't see them because they're not, they're not all over television, and they're not pushing themselves on us in the media, but they're all there, that generation of really old world, old fashioned people who observe a Seder in my building, just lovely on the holidays. They're just wonderful.
Can I ask you what it's been like working with Michael Sheen this whole time?
Well, Michael and I have worked together now for 18 months, and at least 18 months. And 2 days ago, he came up to me on the set, and I said, well, I'll see ya. He said, I'll see ya. And we're going to see a lot of each other next year as well. You know, we both burrowed into our characters profoundly. We both of us, he's a very strong, savvy stage actor, and you have to have that. You have to have a partner who, if you're going to be in a hit on stage for a year and a half, who feels the same way you do about maintaining the level of the performance. And Michael felt that way very strongly, and so did I.
I just interviewed him, and he said he's going to really miss the character.
Oh, I bet, yeah. I'll miss Nixon a lot. A lot.
Now, had you read this particular Brian Morton's book before?
No. And I asked Andrew Wagner if I could read the book, and I said, I won't read it if you tell me not to, and he said, please don't, because the Leonard I want to create with you is not really quite the Leonard in the book. I don't want you to be confused. I said, but I can just pick things from it that work, and he said, no, don't. I said, you're underestimating me, I said.
Have you read it since, or do you plan to?
No, it's sitting on the table in the room they got for me, and I don't think I will. First of all, I have to tell you, and I'm not being disingenuous, I didn't expect any of this from this movie. I had a wonderful time doing it, but when I saw it, I was stunned by how beautifully he sewed it together. You know?
Yeah, so I'm going to
keep just the memory of the movie. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
I knew someone was coming up behind me.
This one is for me.
For who?
This is for my friend, Matt O'Connor.
So did you always want to be in a Superman movie?
No. I didn't, but I'm very happy now I was.